I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Kirk Lapointe is the managing editor of the Vancouver Sun and an adjunct professor at the University of British Columbia's Graduate School of Journalism. Before that, he was at CTV, the Hamilton Spectator, and 10 years ago, he was the founding executive editor at the National Post. His website, a very fine repository of links, as well as his blog, is at themediamanager.com. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Kirk Lapointe. Good morning, Mr. Lapointe.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. The thing that people are talking a lot about is this redesign of the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
How does a redesign come about?
You know, actually, we don't think of it as a redesign at the moment. We may do a full-on redesign in the new year. We think of it more as a bit of a change in the content and revamping it that way. But it comes about, first of all, by going out and doing some research. I think the days of editors largely going on intuition and gut have long since disappeared. You can go into the market and ask people what they think. And so we did exactly that. We asked about 7,000 readers, lapsed readers, non-readers, first of all, what they were doing in the way of consuming media, then how newspapers fit into their consumption, and then how the Sun fit into their consumption. And we obviously asked questions about our competitors and a wider range of things. But what we found was that, obviously there's a shift going on, a shift that's pretty significant around the way in which people consume media, to the point where, a lot of people are starting to, signal that they really want a newspaper to provide depth, context, greater analysis, a sense of reflection, a greater sense of meaning on events. They're looking more and more to the internet for breaking news. And they're happy if that breaking news comes from us. But what they'd like to make sure of is that when they get to their newspaper, that there's a bit more of an advancing of the story. So now what we did is we inferred from that that we needed to enhance the amount of context, the amount of commentary, the amount of analysis. Some longer form pieces needed to get in, and so we've gone about doing that in the last number of weeks, and we think that it's been a success. We're getting excellent feedback on it, and we sort of expect that that's the role of papers in the time ahead, that they'll be not quite views papers, I think that's the term that is being bandied about, particularly in Europe, but that they will be more and more hitched into the business of meaning, and that websites will be greater vehicles around breaking news. And the two media will coexist quite nicely.
When you mention the time ahead, how long is that? Because I mean, we always hear of newspaper publishers themselves saying that the print edition of the, what's that, Sulzberger from the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
he was saying that the print edition of the Times could be gone in 5 years.
Yeah, I don't think that he actually believes that. I think that what he's really saying is news organizations need to be prepared to deliver content to their audiences however they want it and whenever and in whatever form they want it. No, I think the newspaper has still a great future. I'm not as squeamish about it as an awful lot of people are. Our circulation is still strong. Our readership numbers, so the number of people that actually consume us, is actually up from last year. The newspaper audience in the city of Vancouver has actually grown since a couple of the free papers launched. And so it's clear that people still want that ink on paper experience and that they're prepared to spend time with it. We're not as fussed about it as I think some in the United States are. I think the quality of the Canadian papers, pound for pound, is much better than what you'd find in the United States, in terms of respective sizes. Obviously, the U.S. has some great newspapers, but at the levels that we are, our papers in Canada are far better than the U.S. ones. I think what's happening is that you're really watching kind of complementary media emerge, and that there's room in the space for everyone to exist quite well. Newspapers are still also a profound advertising medium, and advertisers have not yet really demonstrated their willingness to leave newspapers to go and move into the online sphere. That may be coming, and there may also be other devices that emerge around electronic ink or electronic paper that will perhaps change that reading experience. But we really don't get any sense at all that people are departing the paper in droves because they just don't like the medium anymore. There are a lot of reasons why people leave papers, but in a lot of ways, it's not the actual medium that's the issue.
And your job is to put out the paper every day as a managing editor. How involved are you with the online side of it?
I'm responsible for both, and so I drive. We have a deputy managing editor for multimedia. We have two deputy managing editors that are around our content and our production and a lot of our graphics and so on. All three of them really work across both platforms. But I try to drive the process, and I'm accountable, obviously, to the editor-in-chief for both. So I spend quite a bit of my day driving what I think packaging should be. You see, I think what's happening is that the one thing that is really changing in the way newsrooms operate is that we're moving from the discussion of stories to the discussion of packages and topics and themes. And in our news meetings first thing in the day now, we talk mainly about the various component elements that can be brought to a particular presentation. And so it's no longer person X being assigned to event Y to produce story Z. We're going to have a story, photos, video, audio. We're going to do a podcast. The person's going to blog all day. We're expecting that we're going to get a photo gallery brought into it. We have a database that we're going to create. And then at the end of the day, we're going to find a way to enhance that and contextualize it in order to create a great package in the newspaper tomorrow morning.
And do you find that people are going to the Sun site throughout the day?
Well, we have very large traffic. We're up around 9 to 10 million page views a month right now. We probably have about 650,000 unique visitors a month, which is pretty formidable. And our traffic is highest between the hours of about 8 and 4, which suggests that people are using it as a companion medium during the day. In the research that we did earlier this year, certainly people told us that they use our website. But interestingly, they didn't really suggest that the website was displacing the newspaper. They found ways to use them in a complementary way. And so in the sense that we've developed our website in the last couple of years to bring it toward the newspaper, we now actually are trying to drive the newspaper a little bit away from the website and make it a different type of medium.
You mentioned the Sun's competition, those commuter papers that we see throughout the city. Is that really the? I mean, do you compete with the province as well? I know.
Oh yeah. No, I think our main competition is one floor above us here, in the same building, and we fight like cats and dogs. We have an extremely healthy competition, good rivalry. We really hated when they beat us to a story, and they hated, I'm sure, when we beat them to one. We do the same thing online. We try to be the first ones to break news online, and we're trying to build a reputation as the place that really will be able to do that. They're the two largest newsrooms in Western Canada, really, and so we have a good strong rivalry. The free papers are a factor now. Their numbers are larger than they were, obviously, around launch time. They've found ways to get a formula together that attracts. And, of course, when you're handed out free on the streets, it can be quite an inducement for people to take something that they hadn't thought they might take. But what we believe is that those papers are actually almost like feeder papers for us, that people who really want much more are going to graduate to one of our two papers, either the Province or the Sun, and we believe that they'll make the choice particularly as they get a little older, become more attached to the community as citizens, begin to do their business here, have their careers here, start families here, that they find that they need an attachment to the newspaper in order to be more of a complete citizen.
And the one national newspaper that's sort of started covering BC and Vancouver more often. Are they in your sights as well?
Well, the Globe and Mail is obviously a significant news organization, and they've added resourcing here. They've poached and tried to poach some of our people. They have a really strong mission to come out here. The amount of local content they generate is still only a fraction of what we do in the course of the day, but they have some very strong journalists, and I think I look at competition actually in a particularly healthy way. It actually it makes us better. I don't get too whiny about the fact that someone's got some resources or try to disparage what everybody else does. I think that any addition to the basic sphere is very good. It's good for all of us. We need good competition. This is an extremely competitive media market, despite what a number of detractors might claim. We feel under a great deal of pressure to compete and to be first and fastest and best, and that's a great way to be. I've been in a couple of situations where I didn't have that same apprehension, and I do have it here.
And in terms of, we're in the midst of a number of election campaigns. We just finished the federal election.
Right.
We've got two by-elections provincially. We've got the municipal campaign. We've got the American campaign.
There's almost nothing left to run for.
Yeah. Now, it seems at your paper, do you find that political coverage is something that people have gone to in the last several weeks?
Well, I think it's expected of a broadsheet to really occupy a lot more of that kind of political reportage, and so we take that as a really important part of our mandate. And yeah, I do think that in recent weeks, with people who've had to plug in to the federal campaign, have found that they really were getting their best possible local source out of us. We carry a lot of national material. We're part of our own CanWest News Service, and we have a lot of material that we bring in from places like Reuters and so on, from farther from flung parts of Canada. But in the end, we really believe that we were bought ostensibly because of our local nature, of the advantage that we have here, the ability to tell stories of British Columbia to British Columbians. And so we allocate our resources accordingly, and when elections come, we obviously bring a lot of our resourcing to it, often to the exclusion of other things during that time. If there's been an issue, I've felt in having all of this attention around elections, it's been that other types of stories obviously have to take a little bit of a back seat at times. So we've been conscious of trying to balance election and non-election news during this time, and we obviously have the same challenge in the weeks ahead with the municipal campaigns and even with the American campaign, and then quite obviously into the spring with the provincial one. We've got to find a way to make sure that it isn't just a diet of political news.
One of the reasons I wanted to have you on today was to talk about your time at the National Post.
Mm-hmm.
This weekend marks the 10th anniversary of the Post. I have on my desk the I guess it was the first edition cover.
I have one in my office.
Yeah. You were there from the beginning, weren't you?
Yeah, I was one of the first. I was the editor in chief of the Hamilton Spectator, and our company at the time, of course, didn't have a paper based in Toronto. And when Conrad Black hatched the idea of doing a paper, they needed a place to start working. And they needed access to some computer systems, and they needed to find a way to look at content and then put it onto pages. And so, it, rather innocently, I'd only been in Hamilton about 5 or 6 months, I guess, and I was asked if I could just host a couple of people who would drive down the road from Toronto to Hamilton and for a few times and see if we could start getting it together. But inexorably, I became drawn into the project, and Ken White and I got along quite well. We spent nearly a year in Hamilton drafting various versions of what became National Post. I mean, I have a couple of mock editions on my wall here. Initially, we called it Times Canada until there was, in July, I guess, of 98, a swap of the Financial Post and a lot of money out how large it was going to be. We had rather, you know, small ambitions at first. We, you know, it was going to be a perhaps a 24-page paper. It might, you know, it might have been an insert into some of the existing Salem newspapers, and then a standalone paper in Toronto. Then it became a two-section paper. It was going to have a pretty strong business section, but maybe not so big. We weren't going to run business data. We were just going to run a lot of business news. And then when the Post was bought, all of that changed, and it changed in a real hurry. You know, we basically extended the deadline by about 3 weeks to launch National Post, but suddenly we were a full-fledged paper. We had access to better printing facilities, and it was just the sense that we were going to be a large-scale paper. We began to staff up. So the staffing kind of went from about 30 to 60 to 80 to 120 to over 200, and I just kept racing ahead, and the budget kept going north and north and north. We were given an awful lot of great resources to start it, and you know, we got a great launch as a result. We really did change, I think, the culture of newspapering in this country. We made our competitors better. You know, the Globe and Mail got better as a result of the arrival of National Post. The Toronto Star got better. The other papers across the country learned things from what the Post was doing. And I think you can see the impact of the Post heavily in the 10 years it's been here on the rest of the newspapers in this country. In fact, you know, I think there's even been influences outside of our border.
I was in high school at the time, I think grade 10 or 11 when the Post came out, but I wasn't really paying attention to media as much as I do now, say. Mm-hmm. But my sense of it then was that it was an exciting time. It was a fascinating time to be a consumer of media. Mm-hmm. Having been in there, was it as exciting as it seemed?
Oh, yeah, it was. I mean, you really don't get many chances to do anything like that. I was lucky enough to be around CBC News World at its launch. But even then, it was still really an extension of the CBC and CBC News. This was really on its own. And, in the summer before we launched, and I was eventually hired there, I think, in May of 98 full-time, but I'd been working on it pretty much full-time. And to the stress of the Spectator, you know, I hadn't been paying a whole lot of attention to what I was doing there for a few months. And, you know, we had to do everything. I mean, I literally was picking up carpet patterns and desktop publishing systems and working out wiring and sorting through where people were going to sit and who was going to get an office. And that was kind of the stuff at the margins. The really important things were, how are you going to structure a news gathering operation to be very aggressive? How much you were going to do in the short term, in the medium term, in the long term, what kind of investigative prowess were you going to have, where were you going to bring your commentary to the paper, where were you going to fetch it, who are you going to hire to do all of that. And then there was the whole visual element of it, how the paper was going to be designed, what sorts of new rules were going to be put into place in order to make it a beautiful visual paper. And all of that had to come together and get stirred up really within the space of, it was a matter of months, because we were hiring people down to about the last 2 or 3 weeks before launch. A lot of them were coming from all parts of the world. Many of them were coming from pretty senior jobs where they were, and they were giving up a lot. We were obviously trying to provide decent salaries, but they were giving up a lot of security in order to become, smaller fish in a big pond. And for a big chunk of time there, that was just what made people go. There was that adrenaline of working really long hours and creating something that was quite different. And what really drove us too was just the skepticism in a lot of ways, a bit of arrogance on the part of some of the competitors of the Post, who really doubted that we were even going to launch, much less last. And we launched, our circulation just flew through the ceiling. We were, by Christmas time, you know, out there neck and neck with the Globe and Mail in terms of circulation. And the Globe function, and then it got itself together and did, and responded quite well, became, you know, a much stronger paper, added sections, made itself more colorful and lively, and hired an editor from England to do it, and all of those types of things were really as a result of that one decision, and so we felt part of a form of Canadian media history, and, you know, those were still obviously days where, and I was responsible for the website that we had, and even the website was quite different and quite active, but, you know, the website was still an extremely small ingredient in the overall package. It was this great newspaper that had lots of space to tell stories, plenty of resources, and, you know, we worked at it as hard as we could in order to make it a great launch.
And working for Conrad Black and Ken White, that was a great experience for you?
Well, you know, there's great mythology about Conrad Black and what kind of a guy he is, and it's largely puffed up by his detractors and a lot of ideological critics of him. I worked for him both, I worked for him, I guess, at Southern News and at The Spectator before I worked at The Post. He was a great editor's proprietor. He got you resources. He believed that as long as your audience was happy, he would be happy. You know, we really didn't feel a big, strong grip of what he, of what his own personal preferences might have been. He was looking for an exciting paper, and he was very happy to have you just do that. And if he got great, great attention for having this great lively paper, that was going to make him terribly happy and proud. And so he moved heaven and earth in order to get the resources necessary at launch. And I think had to fight a lot of the doubters because he'd never really launched anything before. He'd largely been an acquisitor. And I think in the end it proved that if you trust the people below you to simply create a lively paper, you don't have to be any kind of interfering proprietor, and those are the best kinds. They're the ones that just simply trust you to please your audience. And we knew that we had to put it in a particular political position in order to fit into that market, particularly in the Toronto market. But our news coverage in particular was just very aggressive, and I think it surprised everybody about how aggressive we could be, how many stories we could break, how much packaging we could do on a basic story that others couldn't do on deadline. I remember there was a fairly nominal military story that broke at about 6 p.m. Toronto time, and the next day the Globe and Mail had one story, and we had six pages, and that just showed our resolve, and I think it just scared the daylights out of the other media, and they had to redouble their efforts in order to keep the attention of readers.
And Ken White was very much a part of that as well.
Oh, no. Ken was the ultimate editorial leader, unquestionably. Martin Newland was the deputy editor. Martin now he's actually gotten to start a second paper in Abu Dhabi, the National. And he went on to be the editor of the Daily Telegraph in London back after his time at the Post. And they were two great, one was more intellectual, the other one was more visceral. They were a really powerful combination in terms of what they wanted. I think they leaned on me for certain types of things, and I could, I brought a little something to the table, but they were both pretty formidable, ferocious newsmen. And in a lot of ways, despite the fact people maybe didn't like the editorial pages in some cases, they couldn't doubt the breathtaking quality of the day-to-day news coverage. It was quite electrifying. And I think it shook up Canadian journalism, and it still does to this day. I think it's still an extremely aggressive, talented paper that pound for pound fights above its weight class.
And finally, Kirk, do you enjoy living here in Vancouver and working at The Sun?
Oh, sure. Well, what's not to like?
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
I came out here 5 years ago, and it's 5 years ago, I guess, last month. And, it's just, it's a great media market, but it's one of the few places where actually you can develop a, I don't ever call these jobs balanced because I think all of our families would say they're completely unbalanced jobs, but if you can find a way to insinuate a quality of life into the kinds of jobs that these are, where you're really every waking hour you're thinking one way or the other about how your media ought to function better. Vancouver offers just this great dimension that a lot of other cities don't, and it's a great media town in terms of the stories that are there to be told. It's still a developing part of Canada. It's still, you know, it's still very progressive. It's still moving in an interesting direction. It's quite diverse. It's got huge amounts of talent, and in a lot of ways, it's just a great source of stories to tell. So, no, I love it here. It's not as if I've had hundreds of opportunities to move back east, but any time that specter's been there, it's not being thought of for a second. I love it here, and I'd like to live out my working days here.
It's been a pleasure having you on the program, Kirk, today, and I do appreciate it.
No, my pleasure.
Kirk Lapointe, Managing Editor of the Vancouver Sun. TheMediaManager.com is his website for the commentary. I'm Joseph Flanta.